The arrival of Antonin Dvořák in September 1892 as director of New York City's National Conservatory of Music represented a triumph of persistence on the part of Jeanette Thurber, the conservatory's visionary founder. Not only did so celebrated a European composer confer an indispensable imprimatur on the fledgling school, Dvořák, as Thurber knew, was an instinctive Democrat, small d, a butcher's son, and a cultural nationalist. Antonin Dvořák had hardly set foot in Manhattan before learning, and not only from Thurber, that, as he wrote to friends, "The Americans expect great things of me, and the main thing is, so they say, to show them to the promised land and the kingdom of a new and independent art. In short, to create a national music. If the small Czech nation can have such music, then America should be able to, too." And Dvořák, overwhelmed by new excitement and attention, by the scale and pace of American life, by the caliber of American orchestras, more than took the bait. No sooner did he arrive than he began searching for an American folk music, quote unquote, that he could utilize and so point the way for Americans. "It is certainly both a great and a splendid task for me," he wrote, "and I hope that with God's help, I shall accomplish it. There is more than enough material here and plenty of talent." By talent, Dvořák meant American composers and instrumentalists, including his own students, some of whom he found very promising. By material, he meant American sights and sounds, American roots, another spirit, other thoughts, another coloring. There was no population in Bohemia equivalent to Native Americans, and like other Europeans, Dvořák was fascinated by them. And he did not experience blacks in Habsburg lands, but in New York he had for the first time heard such melodies as Deep River and Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, in which he detected an American music to come. With his rustic roots and egalitarian temperament, Dvořák was precisely the kind of cultural nationalist to inspire Americans. He proved inquisitive and empathetic, as eager to learn as to teach. His aspirations for American music resonated with the hopes of Jeanette Thurber and other New Yorkers, impatient for the emergence of a musical idiom as recognizably American as Dvořák was Bohemian. That from an article by Joseph Horowitz titled Dvořák and the Teaching of American History, where we heard of the efforts in late 19th century America to create what they called a national music, and the example provided by Dvořák of a composer looking to homegrown songs and melodies for inspiration. There are many living, breathing composers today who are turning to early American music to create works for our time. And the Choral Society of Northeast Pennsylvania will present a program this Sunday at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton titled New Americana, featuring some of the most creative voices writing in the 21st century. Joshua Harper is director of choral activities and assistant professor of choral conducting and applied voice at Wilkes University. He is artistic director and conductor of the Choral Society, and he paid a visit to the WVIA Benko studio to talk with us about the ensemble and the concert program that he is passionate about.
The Choral Society of Northeast Pennsylvania is an unauditioned community chorus made up of high schoolers through 70, maybe even 80 years old singers. And it's a place where people who love to sing and have very varied backgrounds in singing can come and belong and find their voice in many ways. And I think that's so important to offer in the region. And so we meet just through the fall and the spring on Monday nights once a week and work on these programs and a variety of music, variety of types of singing. We talk a lot about how to sing, and we do talk about vocal technique and things like that. But I really do believe with my whole heart that everyone needs to have a space to explore their voice and to sing. And I'm so thrilled that that's what the Choral Society has been for this region for the last 26 years and beyond, but that I'm able to continue that legacy and build upon what Dr. Baker had built over those last 25 years.
And already you've been putting together some very interesting programs. What about this one?
Yeah, it's actually entitled New Americana. And the reason for that is because I think everyone's very familiar perhaps with the Americana sound. But what is the new Americana? And what is choral music doing now? And in many ways, I think sometimes people think new music ignores where it comes from. And that's not always true. In fact, this program specifically is paying homage and paying tribute in many ways to the legacies and histories of the music that came to define America, while also showing where I do believe choral music is heading in a way that maybe people don't know. And choral music, new choral music, isn't just necessarily pop arrangements and things of that nature too. It's a living art form. And that's what I'm really passionate about. So yeah, our concert is actually entitled New Americana, and then we're actually presenting it in three sections. There's the Americana section, there's the new section, and then the final after intermission is New Americana. And the real thing that we're excited about is New Americana is pretty much just one piece, and it's a bluegrass mass. And we are so excited. I'm so excited to share this piece with the region. And I think listeners are going to really enjoy this piece.
Well, let us know how you're going to get to that bluegrass mass.
In the first section, Americana, we are going to showcase pieces that are embedded in American history. So we're opening with a piece called Stand in the River by Moira Smiley. All of these pieces on our program are by living composers, but in this opening section of Americana, it's living composers who are taking source material in many ways. So even Moira Smiley states in her program note that she's pulling from the O Brother, Where Art Thou kind of sound and writing a new kind of American hymnody in a way. And so this is a really fun and beautiful song. We're doing Rollo Dilworth, who's a Pennsylvania composer, lives in Philadelphia. He set Maya Angelou's Why a Caged Bird Sings, and we're offering that text, which is obviously is a very famous poem, an important poem to the time it was written and to a time that we are living in now. And so we're excited to feature a Pennsylvania composer as well in that sense. But then also we're doing an arrangement of Steal Away, a hymn that everyone knows in the African-American spiritual tradition that is also so important to America and where we are and who we are. But then the other one that I'm really excited is a piece called Star of Columbia. It's written by an arranger, Jennifer Lucy Cook, a composer out in California. And she actually uses the shape note tune written by arguably America's first female composer. Her name was Matilda Durham. And she took the tune, the shape note tune, from one of the earliest American hymnody books and has reset it and reimagined it in the America that we are kind of living in today, as she says. And so I'm really excited. I grew up on shape note hymnody. I'm from Alabama. My first hymnal that I learned to sing out of was shape notes. So I've led shape note sings across the country throughout my career. And so I love this piece because she reimagines it and really reflects nature, talking about the fruitful soil, the inviting air. She closes the program note saying, "Through this lens, America is worth singing about. Together with Matilda Durham's enchanting tune, we can honor early American female composers as well as the land and its history that we've inherited." And that's exactly what we're saying. We've inherited this music. We've inherited these traditions, and we're continuing them. And that's what the whole first set is really about.
And since we have you here, someone who has grown up with shape note singing and led shape note sings, why is it called shape note, and what distinguishes the sound?
Yeah, so shape note singing is so interesting in the sense that a lot of people grow up singing solfege, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. And in early, really, like William Billings is kind of the big name in shape note singing, but in early American music teaching, rather than solfege, they came up with shapes. And so you would see a circle or you would see a square for the note head or a diamond or a triangle or a half circle. And those represented tonic, dominant, subdominant, do, sol, fa, whatever language or pedagogy you want to kind of go with. But it was shapes that helped people find where the center was. And then what they would do is they would sit in a square, and you would have sopranos on one part of the square, altos, tenors, and basses. And we still do this today when we lead shape note singing. And everyone just sings through the melody together. And sometimes they would still sing it on a solfège syllable because, again, they were European. They came over from Europe. They knew solfège, but they were teaching their children and teaching the next generation via these shapes. So they would sing on solfège, but they would look at the shapes. And that's what, for me, I didn't learn solfège first. I learned shapes first. So that's a neat part of my musical education. And you asked about the sound. Yeah, it's a really bright, nasally sound that I think people were not quite familiar with. Columbia, Columbia, to gloria rise. And even still today, we ask singers, I train singers when I lead these to sing in that style, because what it does is shape note hymnody is based upon a lot of perfect intervals, fourths, fifths, and octaves. And when you sing with this kind of bright sound, you're able to really access the overtone series in a really specific way. And it's why this music feels very earthy and it feels very grounded and it does feel very Americana. But sometimes you can only access those real, the intention. In the same way with Bach, you know, we sing Bach in a stylistically appropriate way. We also want to sing shape note tunes. So as we've worked on this piece in the Choral Society, we're singing with a brighter, more forward sound in order to make those intervals come alive in an authentic way.
And then we go into
new. So the new section features three works, two in particular that have really nothing to do with the Americana sound, but really more about where America is today in choral composition. So the first piece is by Dale Trumbor. She's a fabulous composer out in California. It's called In the Middle. And it's just a text that I know the singers of the Choral Society have really begun to resonate with, because it just talks about how time, we're always running out of time, running out of time. But sometimes, as the text says, we take off our watches. Sometimes we lie in the hammock. And it's just a really real poem about stopping and thinking and enjoying and reflecting on the beauty that is around us. It's such a cool piece, and it's really neat because Ron Stabinski, our fabulous collaborative pianist, he actually acts as the metronome, as the clock, and he's constantly speeding us up and slowing us down as we're trying to process how to deal with this time that we're running out of time. And the final part of the chorus just goes, running, 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 running. And it stops because we've run out of time. So it's a really cool piece, and I'm excited to share that with everyone. And then what I'm really excited about and cannot wait to share with everybody is a piece by Alex Burko. Alex was born in 1995, but he's already been on three Grammy-nominated albums for choral performance. He's one of the rising voices in choral performance, and he's a good friend of mine. We went to school together. He was an undergraduate when I was doing my doctoral work. I got to conduct a lot of his early music, and I'm so proud of how he has catapulted. And he composes for The Crossing in Philadelphia, for Conspirare in Austin. They have him out very regularly. Those are the albums he was nominated on. But he wrote this piece called You Through Me, actually just last year, 2024. And the text is by Ruta Kuzmikas. And Ruta wrote this poem about the Elizabeth Street Garden in Soho, New York, and how actively, right now, you can follow them on Instagram, they're tied up in the courts because there's a movement to take the garden and make it a space and build public housing, which is needed. But the problem is there are so few green spaces in New York, and this space is beloved by the community. And so this community is struggling with what to do with this space. And the idea of the text is actually written from the garden's perspective. And it discusses the dichotomy between whose space belongs to and what thoughts, emotions, and experiences we impress upon that place and places in general that is at the heart of the piece. That's in the program note that Ruta wrote. And I'm so excited because I could not wait to introduce this piece to the Choral Society. And it's probably our hardest piece on the program. Luckily, they have taken to it in the exact same way that I have. And many people the other night when we ran it said, this is my favorite piece. And it's just, it's really evocative. It's so powerful. It goes and goes and ponders and ponders. And then it gets to this point where this huge chord, come back to me just as you are, to sleep within your quiet room, to love and grieve and take the time you need, for who knows what tomorrow brings. And it's just a really powerful piece. I think it's a really important reflection of the times that we're in, and the Choral Society loves it. And that's always the perfect beauty when a conductor is impassioned about something, but the chorus also becomes impassioned about it as well. And so this is exactly the sort of thing that I wanted to really focus on in the first half of this program, is I want to introduce people to Alex's voice, and I want to introduce them to music that was written last year that is, I think, really propelling our art form forward. New music should reflect the times. It should be a time capsule for people to go back to and say, what was happening in 2024? What was happening in 2025? And they should be able to look at this art and find that. And I think this piece does that.
You're giving us a sense, Joshua, of the varied sources and sounds in American music then and now.
Right. It is varied in that way. I mean, I think between all of these living composers, you're still going to hear a variety of sounds, because some of them are influenced by the African-American choral tradition or shape note singing tradition or the bluegrass tradition. Ultimately, all of these composers are drawing upon the source material that we're blessed to have as Americans, but again, reinterpreting it, reinventing it in a way that makes sense and that resonates in 2025.
And so Sean is giving us an unclouded day?
Yeah, so Sean Kirchner is another amazing composer who I've had the privilege of interviewing multiple times and working with. He wrote a set of three pieces called Heavenly Home and just reimaginings of what kind of old American hymnody can be. His piece, Unclouded Day, is really important to me because the first time I heard it, actually when it was premiered, the Santa Fe Desert Chorale sang it at a ACDA convention. And I just sat in the pew with my best friend, who's also from Alabama, who's a choral conductor, and we just quietly cried together, because this is an 8 and sometimes 12 part arrangement of a tune by Altwood that is also just older, but it is reimagined in a way that makes the choral music lover feel something. And it was the perfect blend and tie, I think, of where I come from as someone who grew up in the South and someone who came to love Bach and choral music and that rich, dense texture. And so Unclouded Day, I asked Sean when I was interviewing him a couple years ago about this piece. I said, what do you want the singers to know? What do you want the audience to know? And he said, Joshua, it's very simple. I hope that everyone just feels joy. And that's our hope when we end our first part of the concert with Unclouded Day, is that you will just feel joy, because we all need a little bit of joy. And I just love this piece, and I'm really excited to share it with everyone.
Do we take a break here?
We take a break. We've had a lot of good music at that point. There'll be a good 10, 15 minute intermission for people to kind of process and feel what Americana and new was, so they can have time to come back and process our main event, which is our second half featuring Tim Sharp's Bluegrass Mass.
How old is it, and what was the impetus? Do we know?
So Tim Sharp wrote this mass, I'm going to forget the exact date, but it was in the mid-20-teens, so it's not too old. Tim Sharp is the former executive director of the American Choral Directors Association, but similar to me, he also has some deep Southern roots. And it's really interesting when you think about what the mass is as a choral genre. We know so many different masses, whether it is Mozart, whether it is Verdi, right? But what those original masses were was they would take the chant lines of the Roman Catholic Mass, and then they would flesh those out into more of a choral way. I mean, the Dies Irae theme is probably the most well-known, an old, old, old tune, but it's still reincorporated in the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries. So what's so interesting that Tim Sharp does with the Bluegrass Mass is, instead of using the Roman Catholic chant lines, he takes the tunes of American Southern hymnody and uses those as the basis for the composition. And then rather than using a classical European orchestra, he uses a bluegrass band. And so we're really excited to feature Big Valley Bluegrass. They're a bluegrass band south of us down in Allentown, and they're coming up to collaborate with us on this work. And so we're really excited to sing this mass text, but on tunes that people will hear. If you've ever sung any really hymns in any Protestant tradition, your ears will be like, I know that one. But also to feature a banjo and mandolin and upright bass and fiddle. And it is really amazing how it works. Some of you listening might say, that sounds horrible. There's no way it's pulled off. And I will say, when I first heard about this, I was highly suspect about it as well, because there's definitely a line of I think, forced or comic or cheesy that it could become. But what's interesting and why Tim Sharp's Mass has received a lot of acclaim is it works. It's a refreshing new addition to the canon of choral music Mass settings. But it's a one that I think America can call their own and be proud of in that way. Tim Sharp is a banjo player, so it makes sense that he just wanted to play his banjo and sing a little choral music.
Now, is it then structured with a Kyrie, a Gloria, Credo, Sancta?
Exactly. Yeah. So we open up with an introit, and it is followed by, it's called High Lonesome Kyrie, High Lonesome Gloria, Credo, Sanctus, Agnus Dei. And so we go through, and it's not all in Latin. In fact, we even sing some of the hymn tunes, do Lord, oh, do remember me. All of that is embedded in the Mass. But we do sing Kyrie, just with a little different twang. Kyrie eleison. So it's a really interesting reinterpretation of the Mass. It's also just a good time, and we're so excited to be able to bring, I'm so excited to be able to bring this piece to the region, but also to, I think, continue the genre of the Mass and feature something fresh and new that's being done in the exact tradition that the Mass was built to be. I mean, again, Mozart literally takes these tunes from hymnals when he writes his Mass settings, and we're doing that still today. Just instead of the Roman Catholic Mass, we're using Protestant hymn books, hymnody.
Are we as audience members going to be inclined to...
Yes, there's a lot of sections that you almost can't help but toe tap and clap. You know, I always try to encourage audiences, it's probably not a clap along because there are a lot of shifts in the tempo here and there. But ultimately, if you find that all of a sudden your toe is tapping there on the floor, good. That's actually what we're going for. We want it to be fun. We want it to be something people can have a good time to. We'll maybe save the square dancing for afterwards. But I think ultimately, if you're not swaying, if you're not rocking, if you're not tapping, if you're not quietly maybe clapping, yeah, we're not doing our job right.
And what have the singers been saying?
They love it. In fact, I think it's really funny how this came about. When I was interviewing for the position as artistic director, one of the questions they had asked was what larger works I had worked on with my former adult chorus out in Arizona. And I mentioned I had done this Bluegrass Mass with them. And as we were finalizing the programming for the year after I was offered the position, both the board chair and the chair of the search committee both immediately said, as the ink dried, "And we're doing the Bluegrass Mass next year, right?" And I said, "Yes, we'll absolutely do the Bluegrass Mass next year." And, you know, that's kind of how it came about to being programmed. But once I knew we were doing that, I got excited of how to flesh the rest of the program out.
Just curious, you're partnering with a bluegrass ensemble from Allentown. Is this something that they can take in stride? They don't have to do anything more than play the way they love to play?
In a way, yes. It's like all kind of good bluegrass music, parallel to jazz, not the same, but there's a heavy level of improvisation that goes into it. So what's really interesting was Tim Sharp paired up with a guy named Wes Ramsey, who's a big name in classical music in Nashville, but he's also a big bluegrass musician. And so what they did was they actually prepared two sets of instrumental parts. There's a set of instrumental parts that looks like the sheet music that most of us use. There's notes, there's rhythms, there's chords, Western music notation. There's a whole other set of parts that are actually written out in the Nashville number system, which I don't know if you're familiar with. Many people are not, but it's actually a brand new style of notation that Nashville musicians use, so they can just show up to a gig and pretty much play anything without knowing it. It's really similar to a chord chart, but that's what, even a chord chart requires a level of music theory. You need to know what makes a D minor seventh chord, and not everyone knows that. But instead, they started just calling, oh, this is called a diamond. Oh, this is called, you know, this is that. And so they came up with this kind of Nashville number system that people in Nashville in particular are able to just play quickly. So I think Big Valley Bluegrass Band is using kind of a combination. I sent them both sets of parts. I sent them the choral score. They asked for recordings that we had made. And then they play with us. There are a couple of jam sessions where they can just have at it and do what they want. We have a bunch of repeat bars, and when we're ready to go on, we'll go on. But there are very specific, you know, fiddle solos that are asked. The Agnus Dei has a really beautiful fiddle solo that starts it. And so there are some structured moments. And that's been, I think, a lot of the fun dialogue I've had with the band as we prepare. We're obviously going to be rehearsing together here leading up to the concert. But as we were preparing, just kind of talking about where are we improvising, where do we need to be more structured, and finding that happy medium, both for the choral singers and for the bluegrass band, because we want their genre represented. We don't want them just playing choral music. We want to also experience their traditions and their forms of playing. I did want to mention one other thing, that the Bluegrass Mass ends on a very solemn note with the Agnus Dei. And so we are actually doing one final piece right after that, because we want people leaving with their toes tapping again. So Tim Sharp also did an arrangement of the Woody Guthrie tune, I Don't Need No Man. And we're going to end with this pretty raucous and rousing arrangement of I Don't Need No Man that is pretty similar to the Unclouded Day. It's pretty much just there to help you feel joy and to kind of really let the bluegrass shine on our way out. And we're excited that Big Valley agreed to join us on that piece as well. So we'll end with a little Woody Guthrie, which never hurt anybody, and I think will perfectly wrap up our day of New Americana.
Now we need to know where and when.
Yeah, so the concert is on Sunday, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. It's going to be at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton. The concert is at 3 p.m. The concert is free and open to the public. We are so grateful to PNC Bank, who is our season sponsor, as well as the many grants that we were lucky enough to receive this year and the funding that we received. But part of our mission, artistry, excellence through education, though, is allowing this to be an art form that's accessible to everyone. So we will be taking donations at the door, and if you're able to contribute to what we're doing, we'd be grateful for that. But no one is required to pay a ticket fee, because we believe that as a community chorus, we need to be offering our music to the community. And so we would love to see all of you there. There's no cost. There's no pressure to give a donation. Just come and experience choral music. We're going to have a reception afterwards. And I will say, if it's anything like our fall reception, stick around for it, because it's going to be pretty yummy and a lot of goodies, which I'm really excited about.
Joshua Harper, Director of Choral Activities and Assistant Professor of Choral Conducting and Applied Voice at Wilkes University. He is Artistic Director and Conductor of the Choral Society of Northeast Pennsylvania. And he stopped in at the WVIA Benko Studio to talk with us about the upcoming program to be presented this Sunday. It's May 4th at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton. And it's titled New Americana. And we have a chance to hear the Choral Society itself, but they will be joined by the Big Valley Bluegrass Band for the second part of the program for the Bluegrass Mass from Tim Sharp, Come Away to the Skies, a high, lonesome bluegrass mass, and then the Woody Guthrie tune. New Americana, presented by the Choral Society of Northeast Pennsylvania, on Sunday, May 4th at 3 o'clock, Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton. And if you need more information, on the web, choralsociety.net, choralsociety.net. Admission is free. choralsociety.net. And thanks to the Atlanta Master Chorale.